being out, you know. And I had been out for quite a few days. And she told me, she said, if you're not an alcoholic, then I want to tell you something. You better perform like a normal person. And the minute that you don't, there's going to be trouble. One day she shut me off in my bar. She wouldn't bring no more booze into the house for me. I had to go out. And I went out one day and I walked into a bar and the bartender almost died. He said, Jack, please get the hell out of here quick. And I said, what's wrong? He said, well, I'll tell you, your wife was here. And she said, if I even give you one drink today, she's going to burn my bar down tonight. And I said, she has lost her stupid mind. So I left there, I went to Delicatessen, and he had the same treatment. I couldn't get a drink nowhere. And I went home, I was going to murder her. And she said to me, before you murder me, let me tell you something. I'll buy you a drink if you come with me. And I said, what do you want? And she said, just get on the subway, come to New York with me, and I'll buy you a drink. So I got on the subway with her for a drink. And when we got over to New York, I was shaking so bad, she bought me another drink. And then I said, now what? She said, we're going into this church over here. And I said, no, I don't want to go in there. She said, yeah, you promised. Now you've got to come. And I said, what is it? She said, AA, and they're going to help you. And I said, yeah, they're going to help me just like everybody else helped me. I said, okay. I said, I'll go. So I went in, and I sat in the back of the room, and I said to the guy that was speaking from the back of the room, I said, all right, hurry up and help me. I got to get home. I didn't hear nothing that man said, nothing. All I heard was one thing, and that was the end of AA for me. I was sitting there shaking and shivering, waiting for another drink, and this guy is going on, and then he says, if you don't take the first drink, you won't get drunk. I said, I'll kill you, you bastard. And I told my wife, I said, I knew that in Brooklyn. What the hell do I have to come here for? And I broke up that meeting. I got out just before the cops arrived. And I told her on the sidewalk, any time that you do that to me again, I'm going to bash you. I'm so hard. You'll never ever straighten out. I'll kill you. I won't completely, but almost. And she said, you're hopeless. There's no more with you. You're hopeless. I went my way, and she went hers. And I said, you go home. I'm going to stay here in New York for a while. I'll be home. I come home about a week later, and it was two cops in my apartment. And they were sitting there waiting for me to come. And I couldn't understand it. You know, I ran with the mafia, and you don't have to have cops in your home. If there's any here, by the way, tonight, peace. I don't want no trouble with you. But then was a different story. You don't have cops in your home. Nobody even talks to cops, you know. If you keep quiet, they'll go away eventually. But here they were in my house, and I asked them, what do you do here? And they said, we came here because your wife needs protection from you. And I laughed. I said, you're crazy. And she said, no, Jack, you were home last night too. Do you remember? I said, no. And she showed me her neck. And her neck was full of my mark. She said, you thought I was some German or Japanese or somebody who was killing me last night. She said, I'm going to take no more of it. That's it. You've had it. And I said, all right, we'll fight this out among ourselves. Get rid of these guys. And they wouldn't go. So I picked up and I threw the two cops out the door. And that was a big mistake. A big mistake. Because they went out and they got reinforcements and then they came back and then they threw me out. And for about the next 6 months, we were playing King of the Hill with my apartment, you see. And I would get out of there and I would walk the streets and I didn't know whether I was going or whether I was coming. And one day I met a couple of them in the street. And I said a few things to them and they asked me, was I a tough guy? And I said, yeah, I was a real tough guy. And the next thing you know, there were six of them. And we were in the back of a building. And I'll never forget it. I had asked to go into the back of the building. I was a real hard guy. And I bounced a few of them. And then they come at me with sticks. And I remember laying on the floor and one cop with his knee in my throat begging me not to get up no more. He said, "Please, kid, don't get up no more because we're going to have to kill you." And I said, "That's about right, yeah. Take your knee out of my throat and let me up." Well, to make a long story short, I wound up in Kings County Hospital in a straitjacket strapped to a bed. My both jaws were wired together. My eyes were shut. My head was a mass of stitches. 5 fingers broken on my right hand. My chest was caved in. And the horror of the whole thing was a big lump of blood that I had at the back of my throat and I couldn't spit it out. And every time I made a noise, some nurse came by and said, "Shut up or we'll put you in a violent ward." I lay there and I cried. I cried bitter tears. I cried maybe not outside so much, but I cried inside. And I thought about my mother and what she had tried to do for me and people I had hurt and my wife, as stupid that she was, but how nice that she was, you know, and my kids. I wasn't going to drink no more. I said, "I'm going to drink no more. That's it. I don't care. It's gone too far now, you see." 20 days later, they turned me loose out of that place. They told me, "Go away and don't come back because this hospital is for sick people. And you're not sick, you're alcoholic." So I went home. And I went home at night because I was so ashamed I wouldn't walk in the street, you know. And I went home when it was nice and quiet and I thought maybe everybody'd be in bed, but no, my wife was waiting on me. And she said, "Well, Jack, what are you going to do now?" I said, "I don't know, but I'm going to drink no more. That's it, I ain't going to drink no more." "Well, how does an alcoholic not drink no more? How do you do that?" "It's impossible. If you're an alcoholic, you drink. You have to drink. You have to drink in order to live. Unless that you come to AA and the people in AA teach you how to live without drinking. That's the only answer. The only answer." Now, I sat in the corner, and I was a 12-year-old kid, and I was scared again. And everybody came to see the monkey in the zoo, you know. My brother came. He said, "What's the matter, kid? You having trouble?" And I said, "Please, go away and leave me alone." And he said, "Come on, I'll get you a job. You want a job?" He didn't understand I couldn't walk in the street. I couldn't go fill out no forms. I'm an alcoholic. I'm full of fear. I thought that every moment was going to be my last one. My heart used to pound like this in my chest. And I put my head down in the pillow at night to sleep. I could hear boom, 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 boom. Who understands that? Who? Only another alcoholic. And when the telephone rings and you fly into the bedroom because you know it's somebody for you. And if the kid drops a toy, you scream. You could kill him. Yeah, I know. And I sat in a corner and I sat in a corner because I needed a drink with all my body. I needed a drink. And I was afraid to take it. But the fear is overcome. It don't take long. And the past becomes the past very rapidly. And well, maybe it wasn't that bad. I'll try again and I'll do it a little differently and everything will be all right. And we con ourselves into believing this. And I told my wife one day, I said, "I can't sit in the corner no more. 6 days, I'm going crazy." And she said, "All right, what do you want to do?" I said, "Give me a dollar. I'll go down the corner and I'll get one drink and that's all. And then I could get on the subway and I'll go to New York and get a job." She said, "Jack, I'm afraid." I said, "Don't be afraid. I know what I'm doing. I've been sober now for 6 days. I know exactly what I'm doing. I don't want to drink no more. You think I want to wind up in that dump again, strapped to a bed?" She gave me the dollar. And I went down to the corner. And I had one drink. And if God is above me, that's all that I wanted. One drink. And it was like somebody turned a key in my head. Mental manifestation of the disease of alcoholism. One drink is too many and 500 is not enough. So I had my second drink. And now my mind is gone completely, and I'm back to being insane, as it tells us in the second step. And I started thinking about the cops that beat on me. And I said, I'll find them. And I found them. And would you believe I found them 12 times? 12 times. Beat half to death, wrapped into a straitjacket, and stuck into a hospital, and tied to a bed, and left. I don't talk too good, because my jaws have been broken so often. And I don't see a blessed thing out of my left eye, because I've been blinded with police clubs. And I don't hear a sound on this side of my head. And if I turn my radio up real loud, I can hear pretty good on this side. And my equilibrium is pretty bad. And I walk sometimes like I'm half loaded. But I want to tell you something. I swore before God and everybody in this world that I was having no trouble with alcohol. Alcohol was my friend. It was the only friend that I had. I couldn't do anything except drink. It kept me alive. And my wife, the 12th time that I came out of the hospital, it was a little bit different. Just a little bit. They didn't let me go home. Two detectives grabbed me and they carried me to a police station or courthouse. And my wife was there and with my two kids, and one was an infant in arms, and that boy that's out there going berserk with himself tonight. And I said to her, what are you doing to me? And she said, I'm not doing anything to you. You did it yourself. And she said, the judge will tell you all about it, smart guy. And the judge got to me, he said, Jack, how do you feel? I said, I feel fine. How do you feel? See, inside I had milk in my stomach, ice water. I was scared, but I couldn't tell nobody. So when the judge talked to me, I had to be flippin' smart. Real smart guy, me. I feel fine. How do you feel? I wanted to beg him, please let me out of here. I feel like a butterfly on the end of a pin. I didn't know what was coming next. And he read me a piece of paper. He said, the law makes me read you this piece of paper. He said, Jack, please try and understand. And I listened. I said, I'll understand. He said, I don't think you will. He said, because you know you're sick. You're more sick than you know. And he said, it's unfortunate, but you don't want any help. So he said, listen. And he read me a piece of paper. I thought he was talking about five other guys, because it said that I was a homicidal maniac and that I might wipe my family out overnight and not even know that I did it. And it said, this man will not live for the next 5 years. And if he does live 5 years, it will be in a mental institution suffering from wet brain. It said he is incapable of knowing the difference between right and wrong. He just doesn't understand anymore. And it also said that I would never work another day in my life. And it was also said that it was highly recommended by the three doctors that signed it that I be removed from my home for the protection of my family. And I said, that's not me. He said, yeah, that's you. When you drink, that's you. And he said, Jack, we can't tolerate you no more. Your wife is going to be dead, and we just can't have it, so we will have to take you from your home. And that was the day that I turned to my wife and I said, that's the way you want it, that's the way you got it. And I said, remember one thing, woman, you're going to need me before I need you. You think more of them two damn kids than you think of me. And she said, you bet your life I do. And she said, I want to tell you something. If you come back and annoy me once more, she said, I'm going to kill you. Because my children are going to have a chance to live. And they can't live with you. You are a maniac. And she said, Jack, I warn you. I'll tell you right in front of the judge. I'll stick a knife in your belly when you're sleeping, but if I catch you near my home again, you're dead. She said, now get out of my life and leave me alone. I went, and I was full of big ideas. You know, I told the cop, now you shut up, I'll be back. And they said, no, don't step foot in Brooklyn no more. Did you ever hear of anybody getting thrown out of Brooklyn? Unbelievable. Well, I got thrown out of Brooklyn. And I swore vengeance, I'll be back. Little did I know, little did I know, as little does alcoholic know, that we are always going down, you see, down. The greatest gift that God could give me, that I see myself as others see me. The alcoholic can't see himself as others see him. Because when he's on this level, he associates himself, I am not as bad as that guy. And tomorrow he's as bad as that guy, and he will find somebody else just a little bit worse to be not as bad as. Now I was at the end of the line. I went to New York and I told my wife, I'm going to get a gun and I'll make a few fair scores. I'll be back with a bunch of money and everything will be all right. She laughed. And well, she should have. I couldn't get a gun. I couldn't see me. I disintegrated into nothing. I went to the Bowery. I went up Mulberry Street. They wouldn't even let me on Mulberry Street. Mulberry Street is the home of the mafia where I used to operate. I didn't know nobody up there. They didn't know me. I was a bum. So I wound up where all bums live, on the Bowery in New York. And I lived there for 2.5 years. And I lived in the summer and in the winter and in the snow and in the ice. And I was full of body life. And I was full of blood, my own puke and my own filth. And I never took a bath and I never eat and I drank. And I drank just little bits of anything that came. I drank painted alcohol, I drank rubby dub, shaving, lotion, anything that had alcohol in it. And I couldn't stand the stink of me. And I blamed my friend upstairs. And I blamed my mother. And I blamed my father. And I blamed my wife. And I blamed my children. And I blamed everything. And alcohol was still my friend. How sick can you get from a simple disease? How sick? I'll tell you how sick you could get. I crave God every time that I open my eyes, laying on the sidewalk in my own filth in New York's Bowery. I cursed anyone that came near me that had a pair of shoes on their feet. I cursed my mother for bearing me. And then I went out and found myself a drink of something to put me in Never Never Land again. And I used to wake up with big gashes in my head where I get hit with trucks or taxi cabs or fall down cellar stairs or subway stairs. And I never felt any pain. And I never felt the heat. And I never felt the cold. The only thing that I felt was the hate in my belly. I hated everything. Man upstairs 40 years ago told Bill Wilson, you stay here and watch this guy when he wakes up and don't leave today. And when he wakes up, you watch him, because now, from what I tell you in this room, you understand him. Don't go. Stay. Help him when he comes to. It was Bill Wilson leaving a hospital for the 57th time. Charity wards of hospitals. Not a big stockbroker. A helpless, hopeless, chronic alcoholic. Bill Wilson. Unemployable. And it was he that received the gift of AA from the man upstairs 40 years ago in a charity ward of a hospital in Akron. I understand completely in my mind. The man upstairs did not want alcoholics hurting little people, little children, did not want wives crying in their aprons, did not want these people who were insane with alcohol, the only 5% of the world, but hurting millions. He finally gave us a way, gave us a complete, gentle, easy way for the alcoholic to change his whole life and take care of his disease, to learn to live with it. The doctor told Bill that day, Bill, it's a shame I got to turn you loose, but the Lord says I do. And he said, next week you'll be back here again 58 times. And one of these times, we're not going to bring you back. We're going to have to leave you dead. Because you're going to die or you're going to go insane. He says, Bill, before you leave, go look at that guy down there. We brought him in last night. Go look at you. a week from today. So Bill went down in that room and he looked and he understood. He knew exactly how that man was going to feel. And he tells us in his own words that the whole room was filled with a great white light. And suddenly he knew that he didn't have to drink no more. And he didn't. That was the miracle of AA 40 years ago. And that's why we're all here tonight. The God-given, God-inspired program. You don't like the word God? Try higher power. A power greater than yourself. Anything that you choose to call it. But you'll one day come to believe, as I did, and as Bill Wilson did, that the guy upstairs loves us all very well. And he doesn't love me any better than he loves you. None of you. We are all equal in that respect. Bill came out of that hospital, and that was the beginning of AA, and some years later, my time came. Every alcoholic is watched by the higher power. Every alcoholic has his moment. And I say that the moment that you are sent or brought here to AA by your sponsor, the man upstairs has a job for you to do. Don't go away. Stay and do the job. Learn and stay. You see, I was in a Bowery, in a dirty, filthy bathroom in the back of a dirty, filthy bar. And I was trying desperately to get down a morning drink so I wouldn't die. And I remember falling about in that filthy place. And I remember the phrase drink coming back. And I knew it was going to be a tough day. And that particular day was the toughest day of my life, and yet it was the best. Because I, after fourth or fifth try at getting one down, hemorrhages of the stomach. And I fell down on a silky floor because I was so weak. And I hooked my chin on the bowl, and I literally watched myself running down a toilet bowl. And every time I retched, more blood. And finally, I looked at the bottle that I was holding in my hand, and I said, that's my trouble. Alcohol. Can't be anything else. There is nothing else. Nobody's bothering me. I got it, and I can drink it. And I took the bottle, and I threw it over my shoulder, and I said, I ain't going to drink no more. I'm going to die. And I lay there waiting to die. And I didn't die. Because the man upstairs watches every alcoholic. And pretty soon things started to happen. I kept trying to stop from bleeding, and I tried to hold my breath a little longer at a time. And finally, I did pretty good, and now I couldn't move. I was so weak. And I want to tell you, I started to see pictures in my head. And my head was not too good, but I started to see a lot of pictures, color pictures, and beautiful and clear. My wife, places I had been, good times, bad times, mostly good times. And I was kind of starting to enjoy it, you know. It was like a coma. And then came one picture where I was up in the light, looking down at everybody in a big room, all milling about, all drinking coffee. And I couldn't figure it out, what the hell it is. And then suddenly, like a bolt out of the blue, I knew. It was that AA meeting I had been at years before, where the guy said, don't take the first drink and you won't get drunk. And I let out a scream and I said, you damn fool. You had it in the palm of your hand. You had the answer and you threw it away. And I said, you stupid idiot. And I cursed myself good. And from somewhere, I don't know where, I can only attribute it to my friend upstairs, came one thought. Maybe it's not too late. Maybe. And I crawled out of there on my hands and knees, onto the sidewalk, and I begged anybody that came by, please call AA for me. And people were afraid to get near me because I stink so bad. And I remember trying desperately. My mouth was all busted up and my throat was all infected. Nobody could understand me. And I remember people running away from me, and I remember people pushing at me. Finally, somebody said, okay, I'll call him for you. And he called AA for me. And I sat down and I waited. And I trembled and I shook. And I wondered whether I was dreaming things again. I said, maybe it's a dream. Because the doctors were right, you know. My mind was badly damaged by booze. And I didn't know what was reality and what was unreal. But I sat there and I just sat and I held on. And AA came. AA came. A little guy stood in front of me and he had his wife with him. And she was littler than he was. And she said, oh my God, look at him. And I remember he said, Gene, it's all right. Don't worry about it. He won't hurt you. And then he come to me and he said, my name is Sam Cohen, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm here to help you. And I'll never, ever forget if I live to be 2,000 years old. I can never forget the look in that man's eyes. I can never, ever forget the understanding that he had in him. I knew then what the gift was that Bill Wilson was given 40 years ago. The gift of understanding one alcoholic for the other. You don't have to talk. You don't have nothing. You can see him and feel him across the room. And this is the empathy that the alcoholic has one for the other that they can't put in bottles. And they can't put it in pill form. And no doctor can learn it. And no priest or minister can absorb it. Not fully. It has to come from the heart, a gift from the higher power. One alcoholic understanding the other. He said to me, do you want to stop drinking? I said, yeah. And he was a brave man. He got up close to me. And he said, I tell you, if you want to stop drinking and you come with me and Gene, we'll carry you to AA and you don't have to drink no more and everything is going to be all right. This man had insurmountable faith. He flew right in the face of the doctors. Three of them said I was going to be dead in 5 years and I was pushing six. And I would never ever work again. I could never understand right and wrong. They gave me my ticket to death and they were right. They were right, but they figured without the man upstairs, he has the last word. I came to AA. And Sam Cohn was right. He was my sponsor till he died 2 weeks before Bill Wilson did. And he taught me so much. He was a little Jewish fella, and his wife was a little Jewish woman, and the pair of them had enough love for everybody sitting in this room. How did I come to AA? I came to AA full of body lice, one half of one sneaker on one foot, a dirty bottomless sock on the other, a filthy pair of pants full of blood and a shirt. That's all I owned in this world. I was not allowed to step foot in Brooklyn, hadn't seen my wife or children for 2 years. No self-respecting cop would even club me. I was truly one of the least of anybody's brethren. If I can stay sober, and I can learn how to live in AA, you can too. There is nothing that is impossible to a person who has faith. Faith will move mountains. You can move a mountain with a spoon if you got enough guts. And there is nothing that you can do in this AA program, because when the third step comes around and you turn your life and will over to the care of God, if you understand them, impossible things happen. Impossible. Well, I came to AA and I was just happy to be where they didn't throw me out. And I often wondered, I said, when they gonna find out what a bum I was and dump me? Never happened. People used to say to me, Jack, keep coming back. We need you. You see, my definition of spirituality, to be wanted and needed and loved, is to be spiritual. I asked Sam Cohn one day, I said, Sam, why do you say you need me? And he said, well, we haven't got a dishwasher for a long time. Well, we need a dishwasher. They had lovely cups for 3 weeks. I broke every one of them, and nobody ever fired me. Nobody ever said a word. They brought paper cups and on. They said, Jack, keep coming back. You're doing fine. And then one day, things started to get better. I got a job as a dishwasher. Didn't keep it long because I broke too many dishes. Then I got a little room, and I had to step outside the door to change my mind, but it was mine. It was my room, and I paid for it. And things started to get so better. One day, a guy called me up from Kings County Hospital and said, Jack, I'm the morgue attendant over here. He said, we got a guy in today just your size, got hit with a car. Come on over and get his suit. And I got my first suit from the morgue in Kings County Hospital. And it was a nice suit, too. It wasn't badly damaged, although he was. And I asked Bill about it. I said, is it right? He said, I don't know if it's right or not, but he ain't going to use it no more. So I wound up with my first suit and a job, and I thought that the world was beautiful. Sam Cohn one day said, Jack, you're helping an awful lot of people. And I said, how do you figure that? I can't even talk to them. He said, you don't have to. He said, when we get new people in, we sit them next to you. Now we tell them to watch you. And if they keep drinking, they're going to get like you. And I was so happy, you know. Oh, I thought that was great. And then one day he said to me, Jack, you know, we all love you. And I said, Sam, you know where I come from. Men don't love men. And I said, you're not one of them funny kind of people, are you? And he said, no, no. He said, we love you because you're an alcoholic. Now, I want you to chew that one over for a little bit. Does your wife love you because you're an alcoholic? Or does she love you in spite of you being one? Which? I know many people tolerated me in spite of my being an alcoholic. But now here, for the first time in my whole life, people loved me because I was an alcoholic, and how good that it was. I went on and on, and days I grew. I started to remember a few names. I thought that the man upstairs had done me so very well. Oh, I was so filled with gratitude. And one day I said to Sam, I said, Sam, you know, I owe you my life. And he said, you're an ungrateful Irish bum. And I thought he was kidding. And I asked him, why do you say that to me, you know? He said, because you are. He said, Jack, what I did for you was done for me. And the guy that did it for me had it done for him. And if he carried it all the way back to the first one, the guy upstairs did it for Bill Wilson, so we all owed higher power. And I had to chew that one over. I said, what are you telling me? He said, you're ungrateful because you never said thank you to the higher power. And I said, well, you know, I hate a lot of people. He said, that don't matter. He sent me out to get you, so he loves you. You're here and you're growing in AA and you got shoes and you got a room. And he said, you don't still speak to the higher power. Shame on you. I said, you're right. So I went out that night and I didn't take the bus home. I walked. And I told my friend upstairs, I said, you know, hey, friend, that little holy stupid over here is wrong. So anyway, thank God I do go along day by day for 28 years. My wife came back, and she came to meeting one day. I thought she was going to have me arrested. I ran in the kitchen. Sam Cohn spoke to her, and he came in. He said, she wants to talk to you. I said, I don't want to talk to her. She's going to hate me again. And he said, no, you're wrong. You're in AA now. The guy upstairs is working for you. Things are going to get better. Go out and talk to her. So I said, oh, boy, you something, you. So I said, watch her hit me with a warrant or something. So I went out, and you know, she didn't want nothing for me. She wanted me. And I was so amazed. And I said, well, what do you want with me? She said, well, you have a room, and you pay for it, and I'm not doing too good on welfare with the kids. So you come home, sleep on a couch in the living room, and pay me what you pay for the room. Oh, I said, that's great. Yeah, I'll do that. So I came home, and I was a boarder. And my kids went to school. I used to wink at them. I didn't say nothing to them. You know, I just looked at them. And I was so happy. And then one day she said to me, "Isn't that couch getting kind of hard?" And I said, "No." Talk about the use and abuse of alcohol. Oh, boy. And then she started making improper advances to me. Yeah. So I went up to Graymoor. Graymoor is a monk's retreat, you know. And I went up there and I talked to a monk. And I said, "Hey, that woman is, you know, she's making noise like a wife again." He said, "Oh, that's good. Go home." I said, "How the hell do you know it's good? You're a monk." Yeah. So I went home. Hardest thing I ever did in my life. And everybody was so nice to me. I had 3 children. Now, I had 2 then. And you know, my daughter used to sit on a lap when I was eating. And she'd say, "Come on, Pop, you could do it." And she'd stuff a knife in my hand and make me squeeze it. And she would work it forth and back and cut the meat. Because I had 203 stitches in that part of my right hand. They told me I'd never use it again. My daughter said I could, and I did. And when the kids went to bed, you know, I used to go down the basement with my wife. We had a big mirror down there. And she used to sit me in front of the mirror, and she'd say, "Okay, now you say this word, and you say that word, and you say it until you stop spitting on the mirror." I had no ego. I didn't know nothing about these things. I didn't know that people could love you so much, you know. I didn't understand nothing about anything except hurting people and stealing and lying and scheming and conniving. And I learned from my children and from my wife what love was all about. And I put all the hate and misery out of my heart. I made my past the past. And I started to live a new way of life, taught to me by a little stupid Jew in New York and Brooklyn. And I don't know what that it is that's so important. The only thing that's important about me, I think, is that I have guts enough to stand up here and tell you how that it was, that's all. I work hard for a living. I work with my hands. I don't make a hell of a lot of money, but I get tired around 2:00 in the afternoon and I go home and have a little nap and get at it again the next day. I'm 58 years old. I'm not a kid. What's important? The important thing is that I've been able to survive and reach out and help other people to survive too by telling them about my bad times and also my good times. See, I have enough faith for everybody sitting in this room. And you wouldn't know it when you see me on a plane with the White Knuckle Club, but I have faith. I have faith here in AA. I have faith for my son, and one day, he will see the light. He will come too. 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I don't remember when, the doctors were right. I have a little trouble remembering dates. My wife died suddenly at 1:00 in the morning. Some kind of heart of trouble, never sick. And here was a woman that we were just now enjoying. My 3rd son had come along and he was in college, and we would sit by the TV and we would laugh at stupid things, you know. We were really living. And then one day at 1:00 in the morning, the guy upstairs decided he needed her more than I did. And at 5:00 in the morning, she was dead. And it was a January, and it was bitter cold. It was almost zero weather. And I had gotten out in the car in a, without a shirt and without shoes. And I remember leaving her in the hospital on a hospital bed, dead, and walking out into the cold and saying to my friend upstairs, "What the hell are you doing to me now?" And you know, he didn't do anything to me. The word came back to me real quick, "Jack, I gave her back to you for 24 years. You had your chance, you got another boy, and you put your life together, she died happy. What am I doing to you? I didn't do nothing to you." And he's right. So I was very lonesome for a little while, and then I went about my business, you know, in AA, and I got to Oklahoma, and I met another girl down here, no thoughts of being married or anything, another woman. And she had had a hard life, too, and she was in AA, and we got acquainted, and I met her here and there and the other place. And it, so now I'm married again, and I live in Kansas, and I still go out and speak at AA meetings, and I love AA so much. I love AA because it's just not a way to stay sober. It's a way to really live. And for the alcoholic, he goes like a meteor, head and shoulders above normal people, because he is specially blessed by the man upstairs. I believe that. And the Lord must love alcoholics pretty good to give us all this AA that we have. And if I live to be 1,000, I would say to anyone coming in, put your heart into the program. Take the program into your heart. Take the steps and absorb them and study them and practice them. Because there are greater things at the end of the 12th step than you ever dream of having. I never knew that I would be a banquet speaker. It's a joke to me, really. People call me and ask me to come, and people tell me about my tapes, and I say, no, not me. My friend upstairs. I simply open my mouth and out it comes. So if I've helped you here tonight somehow, I thank you for letting me. Because for me to carry around such a burden of gratitude that's in me, it would surely strangle me if people like you didn't allow me to come and get rid of it. So I woke up this morning and I said my little prayer as I do every day. It's called The Secret. As I meet my God in the morning when my day is at its best, and His presence comes like sunrise, like a glory in my breast. And all day long that presence lingers, and all day long He stays with me, and we sail in perfect calmness over every troubled sea. So I think I know the secret, learned from many a troubled way. You must seek Him in the morning if you want Him throughout the day. And when I have that prayer out in the morning and in my heart, then I have my coffee, my cigarette, and that's a good day. Today is a good day. I have some copies of that prayer here. If you'd like to take it with you, please do. And I would like to thank the people that invited me here. And when I leave here in the morning to go to Indiana, I have very fond memories of the way that you've treated me here today, and I want to thank you for it. I'd like to leave you with a little blessing. May the roads rise with you. May the wind always be at your back. And may the sun gently warm your face and the rain softly fall on your fields. And until we meet again, may the good Lord hold us all in the hollow of His hand. Thank you, and God bless you. What can one say to add to that? I normally say something like that is terrific, but I think we better call that frantic. It was wonderful, and I know I speak for the group, Jack, when I say we thoroughly enjoyed it and appreciate your coming.